Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Gobble, gobble, everybody.
It's turkey lurkey time.
Oh, shit, he's going to sing it.
No. I'm only going to sing the part that has to do with Thanksgiving. Everyone's like, oh, your favorite Thanksgiving song is turkey lurkey time. I'm like, guys, that is from a holiday Christmas party that they sing that song. So technically, I don't know.
I think it's
kind of both, I guess.
No, it is a thing.
It's like jingle bells. Like, come on, you know, like at the end, you know.
They're fucking us over here. Damn it.
Oh, man.
Burt Bacharach, Hal David, get on it.
Happy Thanksgiving, friends. Thank you for listening to us on our 201st?
No, 200th favorite thing.
Oh, this is our 200th favorite thing? Hello.
401 episodes, 200th favorite thing.
I cannot believe that we've done this for 200 weeks, Rob.
200 weeks. We've sat down. We've looked at each other. We've talked. It's been very exciting. First of all, thank you to all of our listeners for so much love as we celebrated our 200th week on the air. Obviously,
thank you so much.
Could not do any of this without your love and support and kind words and words of encouragement and corrections when we need to be corrected, John Moss. So thank you all so much. John is always – I love John. John is the greatest man. John sends me free books every once in a while. So I'm a bibliophile thanks to John. But
you can really be correct.
Yes. But thank you all so much for everything. Yeah. I can't tell you how much we appreciate all the kind words and everything. And thank you. We've had a pretty good season so far of people that we've had on the podcast.
You know, like a year ago, I thought, oh, man, I don't know. We're kind of scraping the barrel. Are we going to get the next level of people or is it going to – No, I think it's really gotten good, Rob, and I'm really excited about the most recent interviews that we've had. It's been really special.
Also, Robbie Rizel was our moderator, and Robbie just celebrated a birthday. Happy birthday, Robbie Rizel.
Happy birthday today, yeah, or yesterday, I guess, when you're listening to this. Yes, happy birthday, Rob. I was actually last night. I was at his show at 54 Below. I participated in his Tuesdays with Robbie Rizel at 54 Below.
What did you sing, Mr. Thomas?
Oh, it actually ties into my favorite thing this week, which is a little hint to you. But
oh, really?
I sang – yeah, it really – does. It's my favorite thing this week. I did a medley. So Robbie asked a couple singers and some friends to be there for his. He does a weekly show at 54 bi-monthly. And I participated in it and it was so much fun. And I made him stay on stage and I sang him a medley of Jack Cassidy songs, You're Welcome. And it's all because of the brilliance of my friend Rob Schneider that I put it together. Because you said, hey, because I said, what am I going to sing? Because when you sing at a cabaret, you don't want to sing something really dramatic and serious, and unless you earned it, I think.
Can you tell that to everyone who does a cabaret, please?
Literally every song, I hope no one's listening that participated, every song, Rob, was like just slit up, not a cross. I mean, they were just so sad and dramatic.
Pep it up, folks.
My motto is always like funny, faster, like silly. You know, but you can have a moment, but you have to earn it. So I thought I would be really fun and I put together five songs and I spliced them together and I made it about Robbie. I changed a couple lyrics here or there and I had a really good time. And because you guys know I love Jack Cassidy and his voice so much. Unfortunately, he was in a lot of lesser known shows, shall we say, or shows that have been forgotten nowadays, except for She Loves Me, of course. So I think the audience was perhaps scratching their heads during some of the songs, but I hope that we provided enough entertainment that they got through it just fine. But I had a great time and it was really, really fun to sing.
That's amazing. Oh, I would love to. I wish I could have been there. If I was there, I probably would have done a Robert Goulet medley.
I would have expected you to have done a Robert Goulet medley.
I would have come up, I think, as Robert Goulet and sang some of his favorite songs.
Yes,
way back when.
And I just could see you like pose like on the piano, just kind of like lounging, just chilling as Goulet.
I think I would have asked for a cordless mic, but in his days there was always a cord. So he's always like phantom grabbing for the cord, like the cord that doesn't exist.
Right. Because he's got his chordography that he's got set down, you know, where you got to switch hands with
him. I like to sling it over my shoulder and go to town, which is also what I said to Karen Morrow once. We were doing a production at the Muni of High Spirits, which I realized was spelled H-I-G-H, not H-I. So I went around greeting all the spirits. When one time they had us on a local TV station, it was me and Ken Berry, who was doing Do Berry Was a Lady. Punchline? No? Okay.
Nope.
But if you ask me, they should have changed it to Ken Berry Was a Lady, because I got stories. I won't.
That was the Kenley Players, I think.
At Kenley. All right, after Tommy Toon and Doretta Morrow did a revival of Anything Goes.
Doretta Morrow.
That's a real niche name there. Really,
that was definitely niche for the five people that definitely know that. So let's. Oh, thank you for that.
Up next, Shenandoah.
Oh, my God.
Which
Rob.
Is still a show I've never seen. Yeah.
You know, it's always been on my list of shows to really listen to. I've got a list
good.
Of shows.
It's good. It's a beautiful score. I love the score.
Well known, and I've never gotten around to listening it. I'm sure all you listeners, you probably have got a couple shows that you're ashamed to say that you know that you're going to like, but you just haven't listened to it yet. But it's definitely one of the ones that I need to. We should tell everybody, you're in Los Angeles right now.
Yeah, I wish I could say sunny California, but we're raining. It's a little bit of raining here. It feels very fallish right now. So sadly, no. Hey, you know what? Really quickly.
What?
So, folks, I just want to clear something up very quickly. On our 200th episode, somebody was asking. I think Robbie was asking us, and he was saying, you know, tell us about, like, you know, odd guests. And John Simon's name came up. And I woke the next morning with text being like, hey, just so you're all aware, John Simon died.
From Robbie. He was like,
So what do you want to do about that?
We didn't chop it. We kept it, didn't we?
Well,
didn't
it was
we?
Already, it was it? Posted. We posted it on Sunday night, and the next morning they were like, hey, he died. Although after what I saw people writing on social media about him, I don't think anyone was really offended.
What better way to give a tribute to him than to talk about him on the day of his passing? I mean, really.
Yes.
And it's preserved. I mean, we don't want to, you know, hide from the fact that he was a bit of a monster to some people.
It was one of the most bizarre interviews I think we've ever had in our life. First of all, he never talked above a whisper. And when he did talk loudly, you were kind of like, go back to whispering, because I can't believe you just said that.
I think that might have been racist. I think that was a racist thing you just said.
I don't know if I'm ever going to tell anybody what he said, because the only people I think he'll ever know will be you, me, and God bless him, brilliant composer and lyricist Billy Reese, who had to go pick John up from the train station.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. And then take him. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Never mind.
Would take him to lunch. He asked to be taken to lunch, and Kevin and I were like, Billy, you'll do it. I gave Billy $100 and said, I said, go have fun. Keep the change. I don't know where he took Billy for lunch. That's a play. Billy should write a play about that. Him and his lunch with John Simon. There were some times, so Billy had to stay in the room while we did the interview because he was one who had to take John back. So there were a lot of times where, like, Billy was seated behind John facing us, and Billy was just, like, on his phone doing stuff. But every once in a while, John would say something that was so offensive. Billy would look up at us with, like, horror on his face, with, like, his jaw on the floor. I don't know if I'm ever going to tell anyone this story, but we asked him, what was the most offensive thing you ever put in a review that got cut? And he told us, I'll tell you who it was about. It was about Sammy Davis Jr. And it was so offensive. It was the only time in my life, Kevin, I think when we've been doing these, that I wanted to be like, I think we're good now.
We're done.
Like, I think we're done. Thank you so much. It was, and what was even more offensive was the fact that he had no idea that what he had said was, like, offensive. Right. I was like, that's really horrible. So anyway, so I don't think we're ever going to tell anybody. Just you, me, and Billy will be the only ones who know. So so John Simon passed. Daniel Schwartzberger, editor, was like, hey, if you want, he's like, I can, you know, whenever someone dies on this podcast, we replay their episode for that week in memoriam. And I was like, you know, we don't have to do it this week.
I think talking about him and celebrating him just by, you know, bringing him up. He did have a long legacy, and he wrote reviews forever. I mean, he has quite a history, and that part is interesting, I guess. He's an immigrant and he came here. But I think we'll leave it at that.
So condolences to his family. Yes. But
and his wife, yeah.
And his wife, who ran Manhattan School of Music for a very, very long time, yeah. Pat Simon. So anyway, so that's that. And maybe one day we'll release the full interview after Kevin and I have long passed. So that way we don't get yelled at for sitting there and listening to what he had to say. Although an interesting critic, and I'm happy that we got him because, you know, we said this before when we said it on the 200th episode. You know, we want to create a time capsule. And I think it's good for people to see, like, where we have come from.
Like, oh, yeah.
And maybe I'd mentioned this in the 200th episode, like a couple of years ago when there was a critic who had mentioned body size in the Smokey Joe's Cafe revival.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there was such an outrage over it. And I think it's interesting to see, like, what they had said versus go 40 years back. It's like what John Simon was saying in his reviews about what people look like. I think it's good for people to see where we have come and where we are going. So yes. that's why we sit down and talk to some people that you might be like, why are you talking to him? Although everyone else we had that day after him that came in, they were like, who'd you interview today? And we were like, John Simon. They all could quote verbatim, like, one of his horrible reviews about
thinking,
them.
Like without even thinking. I mean, they said, oh, I've been Simonized. And that's the word we use for it. And they all, you're right, Rob. And that's what I read on Twitter as well. I know you don't go on Twitter as much, but everybody that had been around of a certain generation that was on Twitter, they all wrote their quote about of what he said about them or how they, you know, Amy Spanger, I saw her had one. She had one up there. Amy, I mean, it was just,
what is
it? Crazy.
Lonnie Price, who said, he said, he goes, I hate to say that it's funny, but it's funny. He goes, the best thing about Lonnie Price directing the show, it means Lonnie Price is not on the stage.
Perfect example.
You just go, oh, God bless them. Well, anyway, so our condolences. Anyway, favorite things.
Let's do a favorite thing. Why not?
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first, sure. Because I said it ties into what I my medley that I did last night at 54. So the songs I did, so listeners, if you're curious, I opened with from It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, You're the Woman for the Man, and then I streamed into Fortune Is My Face from Fade Out, Fade In. Then I did the title song of Wish You Were Here, and I finished with the song from She Loves Me, Help Me, Rob.
It's
Been Grand. It's Been Grand Knowing You. Yeah. But the penultimate number, it was the big 11 o'clock number that Jack sang in the musical Maggie Flynn. Why can't I walk away? Yeah, it's such a great song. I mean, some of the lyrics are a little suspect, but he does play a clown in the show, so it makes sense when he's like, why must I play the clown? But this is a musical, Maggie Flynn, from 1968, which is an interesting year because in that season, much of musical theater, the sound of Broadway had changed completely because of Hair. You know, pop rock is more, you know, we all know the story. We all learned this. Maggie Flynn is definitely of its era. It is a good old, it's one of those shows that when I would, you know, was trying to find like a lost show that had a tuneful score. So not a lost show that had a crap score, but like Hazel Flagg. Sorry, John. But like a show that really has a toe-tapping, fun score. And I got to say, Maggie Flynn has that. Now, for 40 years or so, it was basically kind of lost because it was one of those shows that was not put on CD, not put anywhere else. It was only on LP. So like Kwamina and Donnybrook and those kinds of shows, A Time for Spring, A Time for Singing. This is one of those types of shows that has a tuneful score, but it was basically not heard of for a long time. Now I'm happy to report that, yes, you can buy it digitally, you can buy it on a CD, or you can stream it on Spotify or Apple. I'm sure it's on Apple as well. And I think that's really, really exciting that, I mean, I looked it up and you can see how many people listen to it. 85 people a month listen to it. I think
are you 84 of those 85?
This last month, I might be around that. So you're welcome. But so Maggie Flynn, let me give you just a couple little details about it. This was a musical that only ran for about 10 weeks in that season. And like I said, had a very tuneful score. And it was the first show by a music lyrics and book by the team called Hugo and Luigi, which sounds like a club act at like Copacabana. But it's Hugo Peretti and Luigi Cretore. And now they were very, very well known in the record industry for having written the songs, get ready, Can't Help Falling in Love, that Elvis sang in Blue Hawaii.
Oh, my God.
Shout, Lion Sleeps Tonight, Twisting the Night Away, just to name a couple. No, we're talking like major
songs.
Major.
They wrote these?
Yes, they were a major – I mean, that's why they were known as Hugo and Luigi in the music industry. In fact, this Maggie Flynn, there's an – I found a demo of a recording from 68 that is – that Hugo and Luigi put out there because they had their own orchestra. So I think either before or after – I don't know the details, but they put their own album out. And it's pressed and it says not for sale. It was like a demo thing. Wow. But it's just their orchestra with the entire score on there. And all it says is Hugo and Luigi. Like they're like – like one, like share, like everyone just knew their one name. I also should say that this their first musical, Maggie Flynn, they co-wrote it with another man named George David Weiss, which I have to guess that they wrote with him because he had two, albeit not very successful shows already that had run on Broadway, Mr. Wonderful. Oh. Sammy Davis Jr., speaking of Sammy, and First Impressions, the Sense and Sensibility musical. And George Weiss also wrote What a Wonderful World. So he had sort of cut his teeth on Broadway. But the three of them teamed up and all together wrote this Maggie Flynn, which is a period musical. And it was Shirley Jones starred in it with her husband at the time, Jack Cassidy. Now, you guys know that they had kids that were family, you know, Partridge Family, all of that, the Sean Cassidy and all of we know that. And but this is the first and only time that they played, I think, opposite each other on Broadway while they were, you know, together. I think they did Summerstock together, but this is their first show. Unfortunately, it wasn't a big success, so except you've got this great score. Now, the songwriters definitely catered almost all of the songs to Shirley Jones and Jack. Like, there's no bit characters. There's a chorus of kids, and they've got a couple songs that are really fun. Let me just give you a brief overview of the story. It takes place in 1863 New York City, right before the draft riots happen at the end, which are when a bunch of mostly white people were kind of upset with the idea of having to fight in the Civil War because they were drafted now and they were forced to go fight this war. And so there were riots that happened in New York City in the Lower East Side, and it was ugly, and it's stuff that you can read about, and there's a real history there. Now, I will also like to say that during this time period that this was written, the Vietnam was going on, and there were riots. And there were draft riots and the same kind of situation. And that was not lost on the writers. In fact, unfortunately, a lot of the critics thought that this parallel, they were playing on it too hard, that it was a little too on the nose and a little too trying to make this 1860s thing like the 60s of today that they were going through. And it was just a little forced, I think, is what I read a lot of it was. But so Shirley Jones plays this Irish woman who is runs an asylum for orphan children of refugee slaves or runaway slaves. So these are kids that have been abandoned for whatever reason. And so the given circumstances before this plot starts is that she had a husband, Jack Cassidy. He left her 7 years earlier. He's gone. He just got up and left. And he went to go join the circus because he's a performer. And he was just one of those people that had to roam around and, and so she's a fiery, feisty woman, and she's going to run this orphanage and do it all her own. She's now fallen in love with the colonel of the Union Army. He's a little more straight arrow, not as fun to be with, but, you know, at least he's going to be there. And so that's how the show starts. Of course, naturally, Jack comes back to town. He's a clown. He's got the face makeup on. And all of a sudden, the kids in the orphanage like him because there's a parade. And bam, he's right back in Shirley's life again. And now or Maggie's life again. Maggie Flynn, that's the Shirley Jones' character. And he returns. And so the musical is basically framed in this time period with these riots that are imminently going to happen, eventually she ends up with Jack, of course, that's basically what the show is about. And this, but I have to say, the focus is not on the show; it's on the score. It is a very tuneful score. It is very catchy. The songs some of them are not very long at all, but yet you will listen to it and think, hey, this is good. This is pretty quality stuff. And of course, as evidence from these writers were hit writers of the time period. Dance arrangements. Trudy Rittman, just had to say her name out loud. You know I like to say Trudy Rittman, a female.
200 weeks, 200 references.
She was so special, and she did all these dance arrangements and worked with these composers, but got very little recognition for it, so that's why we still say her name. The reason why I bring Maggie Flynn, other than the fact that it is a fun, tuneful score that you can listen to on Spotify, is that there is a Thanksgiving-type song. And the song is the thank you song. And the kids all sing it, and they sing about what they're thankful for. And I think that that's a fun little tie-in to Thanksgiving, because there really aren't a lot of Thanksgiving songs.
No.
I, Turkey Lurkey is like on the border because they just say Turkey Lurkey. They don't say Thanksgiving at all, nor, you know, should they. So my favorite thing of this week is Maggie Flynn, Maggie Flynn, M-A-G-G-I-E-F-L-Y-N-N. The cast recording, which had all been unheard of up until the last couple of years when it came back out, and they, you know, re-released it like they do with a bunch of other stuff. So it's a 1960s golden age musical that honestly it's just fun. It feels like the mix between like Jerry Herman and Walter Marks, the kind of score. It's like, you know, it's fun. It's
Jerry silly. Meet Walter.
Yeah, exactly. Which we should get Walter on.
Walter, Walter actually would be great. Walter's got stories. You know, Walter. So this is Walter Marks, who was a composer, lyricist. He wrote Bajor, and he wrote Golden Rainbow, and of course the big song "I've Got to Be Me" from Golden Rainbow. Walter, sing it, yeah. Is still very much alive. And you know, he was Johnny Mercer's protege. He was a PA on Flower Drum Song.
Yeah, we need to talk to him.
Like, Bob. I think Walter will have great stories. So
just made the case. Yeah,
I'll make it happen. Okay. We'll make it happen.
So I am excited for your favorite thing. What is it?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Oh, well, my favorite thing, my friend. Okay, so, you know, pretty soon, as you all know, it's going to be our annual In Memoriam show where we celebrate those people that have passed. And one of the people that passed this year, who was a guest on our show and a fabulous guest, was Martin Charnin, who was the lyricist for Annie. And Martin and I worked together a lot, and it was his death was very sudden, and I know you know it's very sad. So I was like, well, I want to do some research. So I was looking at my bookshelf, and I'm like, what is this book? I've never really looked at this book before, but it's somehow sitting on my shelf, and I don't know what it is. And it's a book, believe it or not, by Martin Charnin. And folks, this is my favorite thing this week.
What?
It is called, I'm going to hold it up, Kevin. It's called Annie, a Theater Memoir by Martin Charnin.
Never seen that before.
Neither had I. It's somehow it's sitting on my bookshelf. So once again, folks, it's from 1977 when Annie came out. It's called Annie, a Theater Memoir by Martin Charnin. But I'm going to show this to you, Kevin, if I can. Hold on. I'm going to see if I can put my mic down and still talk at the same time. But it's a it's a picture book filled with like
you guys,
all of these amazing pictures.
It's the size of a magazine, you guys. It's the book is an oversized book. There's pictures throughout all of it. Rob's holding it up to me, like full page pictures, black and white, and wow.
So it's this great. If you're an Annie, so I went back, I reread it yesterday. If you are an Annie fan, you must have this book. You must buy this book. And once again, it's all about how Annie was created, the idea of Annie, and it goes into such detail on how the script was created, where the idea came from, how the designs were created, the casting process. You can buy it on Amazon, folks. It's going right now hardcover for $29.99, but you can also buy it in paperback from $6.38. If you are directing Annie or you are an Annie fan, you must buy this book. It's a fascinating exploration of how this musical was created, what was working, what wasn't working, how they created a marketing campaign once the show was a huge hit. And it also has this amazingly odd photo on the back that I will post for everybody to see.
I just saw it on eBay. It's on eBay, Rob. It's on eBay. I'm looking at it right now.
You're looking at this photo right now?
It's very comfortable. I don't know how I feel about it.
It's Martin Charnin sitting on a cube. Like full 70s. Like this is like a full 70s. He's giving you full 70s what realness. While Andrea McArdle is sitting on his lap. And Sandy the dog is there, but is looking at the look at Sandy really closely, and he's kind of looking at you going like, what the fuck is happening? Even Sandy's confused. Sandy's like, why is nobody doing anything? It is the oddest looking photo of
his legs are spread like he's like playing the cello, but instead of having a cello,
he's got Annie. He's got Annie on his lap. So this book is filled with some 70s realness. Obviously, it doesn't cover some of my favorite parts of the Annie story, which are Annie the movie, directed by John Huston, the worst person that you would want to have come direct a musical. The Annie Warbucks, Annie 2, Annie 1997. Let's do a Macy's contest for Annie, and then let's fire her.
Love that.
Kathy Bates, Miss Hannigan. George Hearn and Annie's Royal Adventure. Remember that TV movie, that random TV movie where George Hearn played Daddy Warbucks? It's called Annie, A Royal Adventure.
No, I've never.
Listeners, you know what I'm talking about, right? Annie, A Royal Adventure. Yeah, what? They did it. I think this was in the 90s. They did another Annie. Annie goes on a royal adventure to London, and George Hearn played Daddy Warbucks.
Was it a musical?
I don't remember.
Wow. That's not the focus of today, but
focus of today is Annie, a theater memoir. Annie, a theater memoir by Martin Charnin. If nothing else, get it for this marvelous photo of Martin Charnin, Andrea McArdle, and Sandy, the confused dog.
We're all Sandy.
Good old, I think we're all Sandy. We are all Sandy at this point. It's interesting. It's a very interesting thing about how this like juggernaut was created and how they maintained it for so long. I think people forget how important Annie was, because Annie was really our first family-friendly musical. We hadn't really not had that before.
And how it came out of Goodspeed, and I don't think they had any idea that it was going to become this mega, mega musical that it became. I mean, a hit show that made them all filthy rich.
Yeah.
For years and years and decades and decades.
And actually, I shouldn't say family musical, because I feel like The Wiz is a family musical. I'm saying like a children's musical. I should say children's musical.
I think children is the good
word. And don't give me that Oliver bullshit. Oliver is not a children's musical.
Are you kidding me?
Oliver is a musical in which children happen to be in the story. Like Sound of Music, right. But it is not a children's musical. So question for you, Kevin, which I don't think I've ever asked you before. Do you like Annie? Are you an Annie fan?
It's a good question. I like the score. It's so funny. I think that I'm not, because I think most people are a little quietly, a little like, oh, yeah, it's sun will come out tomorrow. Ugh, God, if I had to hear that song again. And yet, I listened to it the other day or maybe a couple weeks ago, and I just think the orchestrations are so rich and so much and so fun. And the movie was on the other day on my channel here on Antenna TV, and you better believe I just put it on and watched it, and Carol Burnett is just
Antenna
so brilliant
TV.
In it.
Phil Lang. TV. Phil Lang did the orchestrations.
Phil Lang, who did the orchestrations for Maggie Flynn?
Oh my God! You see, once again, it all comes together.
He also orchestrated like 1,000 shows in that time. I like it. I actually really, I love Charles Strauss. I love his music. I always have. Annie is not the top of my favorite Charles Strauss scores, but it's definitely I enjoy it, and I forget how much I like it.
What's your favorite Charles Strauss score?
I knew you were going to say that. I think that I need to give you more than one, because his voice is so varied. The idea that this is the same
man. Is it Before the Parade Passes By?
That's good. The same man who wrote Rags, mm-hmm. wrote Golden Boy, wrote Bye Bye Birdie. They are completely different sounds to my ears. So those are I would say Rags is one of my favorites, just because it's so outside the box of what I expect of him to write. And then I would say Bye Bye Birdie is really up there. I think it's because it's when you listen to something as a kid and then you can't quite filter out whether or not you like it because it's good. Or you like it just because you liked it as a kid.
Lacage is that way for me.
Sarah Brightman.
Oh, Sarah Brightman. Yeah.
Like I like it still, but it's because I liked it when I was a kid. Today, know that it's not that brilliant, but at the time, anyway. So
how dare you? She's brilliant.
So Annie, I think, falls under that. So it's just nostalgia. Oh, Bye Bye Birdie. I'm sorry. Falls under that. So I'm a little nostalgic for it. But
I like. What about you? Well, my favorite Charles Strauss score is I love Golden Boy. Golden Boy, same. Followed by Applause, followed by Bye Bye Birdie. But when it comes to Annie, I'm not a big fan of Annie the stage show, but I'm a big fan of 82 Annie, Carol Burnett, Albert Finney, Bernadette Peters, Anne Reinking, Jeffrey Holder.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's, and yeah, I agree.
That's if somebody could take that version and put that whole thing on stage, except for the 9-minute thing where they all go watch Camille, which I still can't figure out. Do you remember that in the movie where they go to the movies and it's such it's a fun song. Let's go to the movies. Let's go meet the stars. Right. And then they get there and then it's literally like they watch like somebody was like, well, we're 9 minutes under. And someone was like, well, let's just put on Camille. And you literally are watching black and white like Camille for 9 minutes. And you're like, move on. Like, move on.
NYC. Come on.
Where was NYC?
Where's Star to Be? I want the Star to Be.
Not available for this one. I also love We've Got Annie with Anne Reinking. Yeah. Let her dance a little bit. Albert Finney, I think, is a brilliant Daddy Warbucks.
Yep.
Orphans are boys. I wanted a boy.
Oh, and Bernadette Peters, Tim Curry. I mean, you got anything with Tim Curry in it, I'm very, very happy about.
I love one of my favorite things is a little story about that movie, if I may, is do you know the story about Easy Street? They filmed it once and it was a massive production number where people were like dancing in the streets and they got like a whole like the whole like crowd was dancing with them. Right. They finished it. They wrapped the film. And then Carol Burnett, who played Miss Hannigan, she went off back to Hawaii where she lived. She got cosmetic surgery. She got a new chin put in, a new chin. And a week after her surgery, John Huston called her and said, listen, this Easy Street number really doesn't work. It should be what they did on Broadway. It should just be the three of you. So we're going to go back and reshoot it, right? So he goes, we're going to pick it up from where you walk into the closet to get the locket. And when you come out of the closet, that'll all be new footage from that point on. And she goes, but John, I just had plastic surgery and I've got a new chin. What should I do? And he took a beat and he said, come out look determined. You stick your chin out to look determined. He's like that way.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, okay, that's good advice.
That's a really fun story. I had no idea.
Yeah. I think the original footage, I think might be on YouTube somewhere where you see, it's like literally like a 50, 60 huge, person, like production number all dancing. But and also Sign is one of the best songs in a movie musical.
How does it go?
You lock the orphans in the closet. They love it. You hawk their Christmas souvenirs. It's where Daddy Warbucks goes to the orphanage to convince her to sign the document saying Annie is mine, and she tries to seduce him.
Yes. I thought, like, it's a sign, and I was like, it's a sign. No. Oh, right. Sign.
It's a sign. It's from Anyone Can Whistle. It's a sign. It's a sign. It's a sign. And it's all mine. Yeah. It's a gold mine.
I wonder if on the movie is where Tim Curry met Charles Strauss and then asked him to write Anything Can Happen on Halloween.
I wonder if that's how it all came together. Boy, today has really been a mind-opening, eye-opening day. I really feel like
my head is going to explode from all this information I put together today.
Well, here, I can calm you down. I'm holding up the photo again from the back cover of the Annie book.
Put it away.
That'll bring you back to reality. So anyways, so mine is, you know, take a look at this Annie book, folks. Even if you're not a big Annie fan, I think what's really cool about this book is Martin brilliantly documents what it was like to get a musical on in the 1970s. So I think it's a really fabulous read just for that, even if you're not the biggest Annie fan.
Love it. That's great. Mine is Maggie Flynn, the cast recording. Check it out.
Awesome. So we wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. I cannot speak for Kevin, but I can tell you that we are so thankful that you are in our lives and that you continue to support the podcast and you continue to tune in week after week after week.
I second that, Rob, and I am thankful for you guys as well and for all the listening and the when you reach out to us and give us favorite things and you comment on things and all that. We love the interaction. So thank you for continuing to do that. It's been, 200 weeks, and let's hear 200 more, Rob.
Yes. So thank you so much for trusting us for the past 200 weeks of your life. Till next time. So.
Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.